This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava. Buying or selling a home is an expensive transaction, and it's one of the most expensive and most personal kinds of transactions people make in their lives. As such, many of us pay thousands of dollars, about 6%, in commissions to real estate agents. That's payment for expertise in the market, guiding us through the listings, the contracts, the price negotiations. It's a time-honored system, but it may be changing. In today's booming housing market, a seller's market, we note, more people are turning away from traditional agents and toward the internet, choosing to do it themselves, or more or less themselves, through discount or online brokers, and they are paying less in commissions. And so today we're talking about the changing state of real estate here in North Carolina. We welcome your calls. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. That's 1-877-962-9862. Online brokers charge less in commissions. Question is, do consumers come out ahead all the time in those arrangements? Has the entrance of the online brokerages taken some of the mystery out of real estate? And just how was it decided that the commission should be 6%? Many questions this hour. And joining us in the studio is Tim Kent. He is Executive Vice President of the North Carolina Association of Realtors. Welcome, Tim.
Welcome to you. Thank you.
And Glenn Wallace is with us. He is owner and founder of My Dog Tess. That's a real estate firm online based in the Triangle. Welcome, Glenn.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Tim Kent, I want to start with you. If you would do for us, make the case for why, if someone is selling a house right now, they should work with an agent.
Well, like you said at the outset, purchasing a house or selling a house is one of the biggest decisions you're ever going to make. It's going to have a profound impact both on your family and its lifestyle, but it's also going to have a profound impact in terms of a financial investment. And it only makes good sense to have a well-qualified, well-versed professional real estate agent, in this case a realtor, representing you and your interests. It is certainly worth the investment.
Mm-hmm. And now, Glenn, you named your discount online brokerage after the family pet.
I did.
Because right. At least from reading online, you tell the story that after selling some property a few years ago, you felt it was so simple that your dog, Tess, could do it. So make the case for us for why people should use a discounter like yourself instead of the agent that Tim is talking about.
Well, I do agree with Tim that in many instances, having a knowledgeable person on your side in a transaction is helpful. But there's also a subset of the market. Maybe they've sold a home two or three times over their lifetime. They're familiar with the process. They're familiar with the rules involved, and they don't need as much assistance. Those types of consumers should have the right to pay less or buy only the services that they want or need.
Mm-hmm. So how does it work with your firm, My Dog Tess? How does that work? Somebody wants to, let's say, we'll talk about somebody who's selling a house.
Well, I'll speak to the super discounted model, if you will. You know, every year in this country, thousands of people head down to Home Depot or Lowe's, buy a for sale by owner sign, stick it in their front yard, and endeavor to sell the house completely on their own. And similarly, every year, thousands of those homeowners sell their house on their own. Maybe they run an ad in the paper to help them market it. Mm-hmm. We basically offer the same service, the difference being the yard sign in the yard is my yard sign instead of a Home Depot for sale by owner
sign.
And
it is a tangible yard sign.
It's not just something
on the web.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And instead of running an ad in the paper with limited local exposure, I put them in the multiple listing service on Realtor.com, MSN, Yahoo, all the major internet sites. So instead of just getting people who might read the paper and might see their house advertised, they're exposed to everyone in the country who might be relocating to the area they live in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now we get to the nitty-gritty part, which is the money, the commission. In that model, the typical model, Tim Kent, has been, as I understand, for half a century, has been 6%.
Well, there is no standard commission. It's against the law to do that, mm-hmm. To establish a standard commission. In fact, we've got a lot of industry research which indicates that the average commission right now is about 5.1%. That's by an independent researcher by the name of Steve Murray out of Colorado. That's the industry average, and so there is no standard commission.
It's just that when I went to buy a house, everybody talks about 6 points is a shorthand.
Things are negotiable, okay. And it depends on who you talk to.
Okay, so that's the 6%, and that's then split between the listing agent, the selling agent, and the buying agent, more or less
the listing broker and the buying mm-hmm. broker.
Okay,
typically split it in half, and then the agent representing that broker gets probably 67-70% of that that split. Yes.
Okay. So let's talk about a typical house in North Raleigh right now. I understand the average selling price is just under $200,000. So we'll go with your figure of even 5%. So that would be $10,000 then split in half between the two brokerages. And now we're talking, let's see, we're at 10%, we're talking $5,000. And then the agent is getting 60-70% of that?
Yeah.
Okay. And that's for how much work would an agent have done for that?
Probably a whole lot of work. I'll disagree with one of the conclusions that was raised at the outset of this market program is that we do have a dynamic housing market in North Carolina. We've had one since 2001, but this is not a seller's market. It depends on where you live. In fact, there's a whole lot of competition out there. There's a significant inventory of new home construction, particularly in our urban markets, places like North Raleigh. There's a lot of new home construction out there, which is in direct competition with a lot of the existing homes that are for sale. And so the statistics indicate that in the Triangle market, 15% of all homes that are listed in the multiple listing service are on the market for at least 91 to 120 days. So it's not just put your house up for sale and automatically you're going to get a buyer. It's not that easy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're hearing Tim is making the case that they've done a lot of work for what comes out in the end to be less than $5,000 on a $200,000 house. What would you charge with the online service, Glenn?
The model I described earlier, we would charge a flat fee of $500 to list the person in the MLS, give them a sign, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then they still have to be willing to pay a market rate to a buyer's agent who brings a buyer to their house. Typically, 2.5% to 3% is the market rate. And we do urge our $500 listers to pay that market rate. I think if you look less at how much the agent makes in the transaction and look at what the consumer actually has to pay, which is what's most important to me, you'll see that the numbers really fall out. 6% of a $200,000 house versus 3% of a $200,000 house at closing. There's a big money difference there.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about real estate and the transactions and a rising phenomenon online. There are discount brokers. One of them is Glenn Wallace, who is owner and founder of My Dog Tess. With us is Tim Kent as well. He is Executive Vice President of the North Carolina Association of Realtors. If you have a comment or a question about the whole process or an opinion, our number is 1-877-962-9862. Let's go to the phones right now. We go to Steve, who is in Greensboro and a realtor in Greensboro. Hi, Steve.
Hello. How are you today?
Hi there.
Hi. I'm a manager of a what would be considered a traditional brokerage office in Greensboro, and over the past few years, I've been counseling my agents, and I list and sell as well, and I do this myself. I practice what I preach. That when we talk to somebody about selling their house, one of the options we talk to them about is that they may want to sell a house themselves, and this flies in the face of what most realtors will go out and tell a prospective home seller to do.
Now, why would you tell somebody that? Because that's your bread and butter, isn't it?
Well, I think there's a certain amount of ethics that realtors don't look at, and one of them is we're supposed to practice honesty, and sometimes the honesty is that if a house is priced right, if it's in the right market area. Now, that like the gentleman said before, the whole state of North Carolina is not just booming. You just put a sign in your yard, but there are certain neighborhoods that do that. There's hot areas that people can sell the house themselves with minimal amount of assistance. And to that effect, that we will revert. If they want help, we will help them and bill them on a menu for service basis if they want our help. Some of the help they can get from their own real estate attorney. And if they want advice and that, we're willing to do that and bill them just for those services they need. That 6% you talk about, a big portion, that 6% commission that people pay when their house does sell is actually subsidizing all those houses that never sell, and that the traditional brokers spend a lot of time, a lot of advertising dollars on, and they need to make that up somewhere, so they make it off the next sale. And part of the other problem is that a lot of the firms, many, many firms in North Carolina and in the country, just have too many agents. It's a fact. I think the number is pretty close that 10% of all the agents do 90% of the business. And so again, when a house sells, it helps subsidize all those agents that are selling three or four houses a year, but they can afford to do that because they're making a big lick on the houses they do sell.
Well, I'd like Tim Kent to respond to that, and Glenn Wells.
Interesting point of view. I agree with your conclusion about the 10% of the agents making 90% of the money, but I don't understand this subsidization, because one of the things about real estate is that these people are independent contractors, and you only make what you earn. You're not paid unless you make commissions. And so I think it's an illusion to give people the idea that real estate agents are making some sort of salary, because they're not. They're paid purely on commission.
Glenn Walls?
I think what Steve has said is admirable. I do the same thing. I often tell my customers, you know, maybe you want to consider selling it on your own before you come to me. But the bigger issue he points out is the fact that so many agents work for so few firms. Historically, real estate firms have never competed on price. They compete by trying to gain market share, and they gain market share by hiring as many agents as they can and by hiring agents away from competing firms. So, you know, when someone who does compete on price comes into the market, it ruffles their feathers, and it's a change.
Is part of that idea of gaining market, gaining the listings, Tim Kent?
Well, absolutely. Large brokerages are very interested in recruiting agents because they're trying to accumulate as many listings as possible, because if one of your listings sells, you get at least one half of the transaction. Let me address this for sale by owner issue, because it's not for everyone, and it's certainly not for the faint of heart. We have statistics that indicate that only 14% of the homes nationwide are sold by for sale by owner. And unless you've had a legal background or considerable real estate training or practice in selling a house, boy, I'll tell you what, I think it's a slippery slope to go down.
Well, we'll get on to the slope, whether it's slippery or not, of FSBOs and more about real estate and the real estate industry in North Carolina. With us is Tim Kent, who is with the North Carolina Association of Realtors, and Glenn Wallace, owner and founder of the discount brokerage My Dog Test. We're taking your calls at 1-877-962-9862. This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Penkava. We're talking today about the real estate industry in North Carolina. Housing market is booming. And with the internet, more buyers and sellers are doing the job themselves that real estate agents have traditionally done. We're asking today whether there is still as great a need for real estate agents as there has been in the past. And joining us for this discussion is Tim Kent, who is Executive Vice President of the North Carolina Association of Realtors, and Glenn Wallace, owner and founder of such a discount realtor. Realty firm, My Dog Test. 1-877-962-9862 is our number. That's 1-877-962-9862 if you want to join our conversation. And Mary is in Martinsville, Virginia. Hi there, Mary. I understand you're a realtor, too.
Yes, I am, and I'm co-owner with another female of a real estate firm here. Mm-hmm. And I would like to know from the gentleman who's a discount broker, what happens to the people that he helps when something goes bad? How much of an investment does he have in that for the flat fee? Where is he after the sale? And the reason I'm asking is we're one of the most highly regulated industries in the United States. Virginia and North Carolina have very similar real estate laws. We have similar regulations that we have to follow. We are there. We're full service. We have people in our cars for days, months, sometimes years, before we get paid. And that's the service end of it. You don't ever look at your commission until you have satisfied people. And you keep these
until you have a closing, right? Right.
Well, you have a closing, but I mean, you never close, because these people end up being, and they're wonderful people, and we're lucky. It's different every day. It's a great business. Sometimes we counsel people and say, you cannot buy a house. Do not buy a house. As a first-time home buyer, you cannot buy a house right now. It's not the right thing to do for you, and tell them why. And you know, sometimes you undo the sale because it's not the right thing.
Well, getting back to your initial question for Glenn Wallace, when you say something goes wrong, what can you give us an example that he can respond to of how
okay,
his
firm? Yeah, here's a good example. A seller has got the discount set up, all right, and they have a home inspection done, and there are multiple issues with that home inspection. Where's Glenn?
Well, what would you do, Glenn?
You're right. I should have explained from the beginning on this $500 level of service that we offer. We make it very clear to the consumer that we're in essence acting like a newspaper ad for you. We're putting you in the MLS and giving you exposure. We are not there to help you do the deal. It's a hybrid for sale by owner model. Now, with that said, we do also tell our $500 listers that, you know, if you run into problems during this transaction and you feel like you really need someone on your side, we offer them the ability to upgrade to our full service model, where we step into the picture and take over the negotiations and do get in there for them. We do advise our sellers, the $500 sellers at the beginning as well, if you really run into an issue and you're diehard going to do it on your own for sale by owner, contact a real estate attorney. The couple $100 in fees that you may have to pay to work out the issue is still going to save you a lot of money from a 6% commission.
Just for clarity, you're primarily dealing with people who are selling their property?
No, we represent buyers as well.
So what would you do for a buyer who finds that there's termites or there are things that hadn't been expected in the inspection, and that could usually... That puts things into a lot of flux.
Well, on the buy side, when we represent a buyer, we're really not a limited service firm. We do everything that a traditional service firm would do. So you come into a situation where there's termites or repair issues, we're going to go to bat for that buyer just like anyone else at any other major firm would.
And that explains why you're charging the bigger commission at the buying end of this.
Well, we don't charge anything to a buyer. You've got to remember, if we help a buyer buy a house, we're going to be paid by the listing broker. We're going to be paid half of that 6%. Okay. The difference for us is, which is also a hot button in the industry right now, we rebate part of that 3% that we earn to the buyer.
Okay. Okay. Tim,
let me read you something from the Realtor Code of Ethics. It says that realtors pledge themselves to protect and promote the interests of their client. One of the inherent problems in a FSBO model or in a limited service model is that there's no one there to represent the interests of the client when the deal starts to become complicated, like a questionable home inspection, etc. There's a strong belief in our industry that brokers who are involved in real estate transactions should be required to receive all written offers, counteroffers, or other communications concerning a transaction. They should be there to present all written offers to their client. They should be there to work with the home inspector. And I admire Glenn for his entrepreneurship, and he and other brokers in coming up with different kind of models, because after all, entrepreneurship is what this industry is founded on. But there's also a responsibility to provide qualified service to your clients, and we think that there's a balance there.
Okay. Well, Mary, thank you for your call from Virginia. We welcome your call. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. Tim Kent with the North Carolina Association of Realtors is with us, and Glenn Wallace, who is owner and founder of the online brokerage My Dog Tess. We're talking about the real estate industry in the state, and with us now is Noah Pickus. He is Associate Director of the Keenan Institute for Ethics at Duke University. Welcome back to the State of Things, Noah.
Pleasure to be here, Melinda.
Well, I want to talk a bit about ethics in the real estate industry. And starting off with that relationship between the real estate agent and the buyer or seller, how would you characterize that relationship?
Well, I've been delighted to hear Tim and others talk about the strong ethics code that realtors have and the ways in which they've taken it seriously, even going so far as to advise people either to sell their own home or maybe not to buy a home if they're not ready for it. And I certainly have a lot of respect for the information and local knowledge and really the protection against your own emotions that realtors can provide to those of us who aren't experienced in this. But I still feel queasy sometimes about understanding the relationship that exists between traditional real estate agents and buyers and sellers. You know, you meet an agent, and often they're showing you around as a friend. It seems like they're a friend. I mean, you know they're not, but...
But they're your companion in the car for longer than you are with anybody other than maybe your spouse.
And they're telling you, you're alien, you've just got off the plane, you're looking around. And on the one hand, they're asking you, and you want to tell them these personal things, what you hope for, what your dreams are. This is a house you're buying. On the other hand, if you look at some of the website guidance that realtors provide, sometimes they say, well, don't tell us anything until you've absolutely signed on, because we, you know, don't tell us anything personal or confidential, because we're not yet signed you as representing your interests.
Because it could be that they end up showing you a property, or they could be the listing agent sometime on a property that you're going to look at with another agent?
Exactly. So it just, I'm not saying this is unethical, it's just, it's a gray area that makes me, as I say, a little queasy. And then there's the question of candor, where I want an agent for his or her local knowledge. But I don't know that agents traditionally say, you know, I really know Durham, but I don't know Chapel Hill. And if you want to look in both, I should acknowledge what I don't know and send you to another person. And you've got this business relationship, but also a very personal relationship. And Tim was talking about not having anyone there to help you if in the discount model you run into trouble. But I don't doubt that lots of real estate agents are deeply ethical and seek to be loyal to their client, but I keep wondering if they're at odds with their very business model, which is to sell a house and to get a commission. And sure, they want to have a good reputation, but I'm not sure that their interests are the same as my interest in this case as a buyer.
Because as a buyer, you want it for the lowest possible price. And if I'm working for a commission, I want that the total price package to be as high as possible because my commission is going to be dictated by what the house eventually sells for. So, Tim, can you respond to some of what Noah's bringing up here?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that are worth addressing. Most people, our research indicates that 40-45% of all home sellers or home buyers, they find their realtor through a friend. Somebody that they know that they trust, or it's somebody that they've done business with before. And I think that's very important. I think that's the best way to hire a professional, is to do it on a referral base so that you've got an element of trust. But the other thing is that I think it's also, there's a lot of information out there on the internet, and it is certainly in the interest of any customer to spend a considerable amount of time on Realtor.com. There's 2.5 million home listings out there, and you can search it any number of ways by price, square footage, et cetera, et cetera. I would encourage anybody who's interested in making a home purchase or selling, spend some time on Realtor.com. Get educated. Learn about what's available, what the relative prices are for houses of certain levels, and go into the transaction at least informed, because I think they'll have a better experience.
1-877-962-9862 is our number. Glenn Wallace, you mentioned a moment ago the multiple listing service, the MLS. Is that a breakthrough that has happened? Because there was a time when it was more difficult to get access to that. Is that what you're giving people?
Yes. Earlier in the program, you had alluded to the fact that where did the 6% commission come from? How was it set? And Tim said that, you know, it's not set. It would be illegal to set a commission across the board. I think that 6% commission fell out because it's a holdover from a period where realtors controlled the MLS listings. It was in a bound book, and if you wanted to see something in the MLS or get in the MLS, they controlled.
You had to go to a realtor.
You had to go to a realtor. Mm-hmm. With the advent of the internet, these websites, realtor.com, you know, getting in the MLS now, because of companies like mine, is a lot easier. So people are saying, why should I pay this full 6%?
Now, do you provide access to everybody, I mean, buyers and sellers to the MLS? Or you're putting the listing in the MLS?
When I list a house for sale, as any other agent, it goes to the multiple listing service. Mm-hmm. And then that multiple listing service database feed is picked up by Realtor.com, and it winds up on Realtor.com a day or two later.
Okay. We're talking about real estate in North Carolina, and we're talking also about the ethics of real estate. With us is Noah Pickus, as well as Glenn Wallace and Tim Kent. Noah Pickus, are real estate, I'm wondering about the housing market right now. It's very hot. is there some way that real estate agents might be contributing to that?
Well, if I could just take one moment to tack something on to Tim's comments and then go to that question, because they're a little separate. I appreciate what he was saying about educating, all of us getting educated before we sign up with a realtor. But I just couldn't help but note that I think if the figure, Tim, was at 40% find a realtor through a friend, you know, that 60% don't. And then if we get educated and we learn about the prices and all this, it leads more toward a Glenn model, it seems to me, is the more educated we are, why don't we want to have the choice, if we've not learned all this, to have an a la carte model or to have the choice of saving money and taking our chances or not. That the issue here, as I understand it, is the extent to which through the MLS listings we're often tied to the brokerage system, which comes out at this larger percentage. So I agree that education makes a big difference, but what we're talking about here has to do, it seems to me, with the issues of once you get educated about these kinds of things, whether or not you want to have the choice of different models and what kind of system you want.
Tim, did you want to?
Yeah, let me try to address a couple of those things. And one of the bigger issues in the industry concerning the limited service model or a FSBO. FSBO owners are a unique breed in and of themselves. I mentioned earlier, it's not for everybody. And they're people who are typically trying to get as much money out of their house as possible. And that's admirable. But a couple things happen is that when you deal with a FSBO property, you find out that more times than not, the house is overpriced. And that's because that individual may not have had the access to a comparative market analysis and really have a good idea of what the house is actually worth. There's an emotional attachment, not an objective attachment. And whether you're dealing with a FSBO model or with a limited service model, as Glenn mentioned, you know, if you're selling a house for $200,000, you might, quote unquote, save $4,000 on the commission. But if you're going through a negotiation process with a well-represented buyer on the other side, you're going to get out-negotiated. I mean, a good realtor is in the negotiation business. And if that price gets drugged down to $196,000, you didn't save $4,000. You saved nothing.
The only point I'm trying to make is all of that may well be true. But what I heard Glenn say was that if there are people, let's not talk about FSBOs, but about the limited services model here, if there are people who've bought and sold before, who have experience, who want to take their risks in this way, who want to buy a limited model or add on a la carte, then the question is, in every other industry that we've seen, it's been technology, when you put the MLSs online, that has driven down costs. You don't have to pay a travel agent. You can go to Orbit. You don't have to pay Payne Weber. You can use E-Trade. Now, if you use E-Trade, you're not going to get the advice of a good stockbroker at Payne Weber. But if you want to take your chances there and you feel experienced enough, then why not have that option seems to be the question here, not whether or not brokers provide good protection. I think they often can.
Mm-hmm. And under North Carolina law, that option's available.
And Glenn wanted to jump in here?
I want to say that Mr. Pincus brings up a great point, and that is for people who are qualified, have sold houses before, just to have that choice is powerful. And the current legislation that the NAR is backing in the lawsuit from the Department of Justice, et cetera, the NAR is in essence trying to remove that choice for consumers. They're doing it in the guise of protecting the consumer. But what's really going to end up happening is the consumer is going to have less choice.
Well, let's talk about that. The National Association of Realtors has attempted to limit the work of online brokers such as yourself, Glenn. There's a federal antitrust lawsuit in the works. Tim Kent, what's the case that the realtors are making in this antitrust? Yeah. How is antitrust entered the picture here?
About 2 years ago, the National Association of Realtors established some rules for the display of online listings. And these are rules and regulations within the association. These are not regulations implied by the federal government. They're not regulations that are associated with state law. Let me make sure that's very, very clear. But there is a point of view out there that all of these listings that have been hard acquired by a broker should be available to anybody and everybody in terms of other brokers who haven't worked to acquire those listings. The position of NAR is that a broker who works hard and long to get those listings should not be forced to share them with all of his competitors.
But isn't that the nature of MLS? Of having listings out there?
Yes, it is the nature of MLS. The question is an opt-in or an opt-out. Should a broker, XYZ broker who has acquired listings, should that broker be forced to share them with his competitor? And there's a difference of opinion there.
I'm being dense on this, but because I don't have a realtor's license, I've just bought a house or two. How I thought MLS was the idea that all this information about all the homes for sale, like say in the Raleigh-Durham, Chapel Hill area, are in this multiple listings service. And if you have a house for sale, you want it to be shown around, so you'd have it there. So how is what is the National Association of Realtors trying to say in antitrust?
Well, it's a shared cooperative arrangement, always has been.
Oh, so it has to be just those who are part of the NAR.
Part of the MLS. Okay. Individuals who are part of the MLS are allowed to share and cooperate in the sharing of information. What you're having now is some business models out there that are not part of the MLS systems across the country who are trying to glean this information that has been acquired by brokers, and I'll let Glenn respond.
And Glenn, are you one of those?
I am not one of those brokers. I am a member of the North Carolina Association of Realtors. I mean, Tim is my executive vice president, and I'm a member of the National Association of Realtors.
And
you're a lawyer.
We welcome you having we welcome you. And other realtor members having the opportunity to have access to that information.
So you're not targeting, so the NAR is not targeting.
But there is a part of this the NAR push that he hasn't mentioned, which is to force a minimum level of service on brokers like me. So if I offer this pick-and-choose menu to my clients, the state would mandate that I have to offer these services. And as a result, I may not be able to economically serve my customer at a lower dollar level. Now, what's odd about this is that discount brokerage has been around since the 1960s. Entry only has been around for years. It's only in the past few years that the consumer has become more aware of the choice that the NAR has gotten up in arms about it.
Because they're going online and trying to find a house just as they're trying to find a cheap airfare.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the fact that they're saying, boy, I can list my house for $500 instead of 6%, a lot of people that come to us to list say, oh, I thought 6% was mandated. I thought you had to pay it. Mm-hmm. They just didn't know this option was out there. And as more people realize it, the internet spreads it around. Mm-hmm. You know, the NAR and traditional realtors feel threatened, and then they respond with legislation.
I'd like to just go briefly before our break to Noah Pickus. Any ethics involved there in this antitrust effort, you see it?
As I understand it, there are these two issues, the minimum service issue that Glenn mentions, but also maybe the more even fundamental one, which is access to the MLSs. And the issue is whether the information that is provided is really a product out of the realtors that they generate, or it's the sellers. Is it my house that I have this information? And I understand the realtor's position, I think, is that it's their information. They made the product, and they can essentially blackball anybody who doesn't play by their rules, which maintains the 6% or roughly 6% commission status. Mm-hmm. And I think the ethics come in here having to do with maintaining that system, which in every other industry, the technology has actually driven down to the benefit of consumers.
Okay, well, no, we're going to have to pick up on that when we come back from a quick break. You're listening to The State of Things, more on our conversation on real estate in North Carolina. Just ahead on The State of Things, support for The State of Things comes from listeners who support North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Penkov. We're talking this hour about the real estate industry in North Carolina, and in particular, that relationship between clients and real estate agents. Also, the rise of internet-based and discount brokerages. We are joined in the studio by Tim Kent, who is Executive Vice President of the North Carolina Association of Realtors. Glenn Wallace is owner and founder of My Dog Tess, a real estate firm discounter in the Triangle. And Noah Pickus is with us by phone. He is Associate Director of the Keenan Institute for Ethics at Duke University. And Noah, just before the break, you were talking about the ethics involved here, about who in particular owns the multiple listing service. And there's an antitrust effort by the National Association of Realtors to keep that only among its members. And you were making the case that is the listing the homeowner who is trying to sell his house, is it his listing or is it the realtor's? Is the ethical question here.
Yeah, I think that's right, because there's a first mover advantage. That is, the MLS right now is so dominant that it becomes a kind of de facto monopoly in terms of the majority, the ways in which homes are bought and sold. And that's connected to some of these other things, such as the effort to maintain a full-service model. Now, I understand completely why realtors don't want to break that down, and I want to be clear about the value added that they bring. But what I can't get my head around is understanding why, when there's a technology available now that seems to have transformed so many other industries, that I can't think of a technology that it hasn't transformed, that we wouldn't want to see the benefit here go toward the consumers in terms of the advantages they have. The argument here, I guess, seems almost like the Social Security argument, where the realtors are arguing we can't let people have private accounts, we can't let people have a choice in the matter here because they might harm themselves. And they may well harm themselves. I'm just trying to understand why they can't have that choice.
Well, Tim Kent, does it come down to, in a twist on the old real estate phrase, is it commission, commission, commission here?
No. There's a whole lot of issues that Noah's raising, and valid issues. Obviously, the owner owns the house. But I would argue that the broker owns the listing. This is hard-earned intellectual property, which has been derived through a client relationship. And there's no way in the world that a broker should be forced to share that information with anybody and everybody. That's intellectual property, and pure and simple. Secondly, Noah raised the point that other industries, and he used the travel agency business, have made significant changes. There's a big difference between buying an airline ticket and buying a house. There is absolutely no risk in deciding whether or not you're going to buy a ticket from Southwest Airlines or from American Airlines. You're talking about buying and selling a house, the most important investment you're ever going to make. Last thing I'll mention, just before the break, we talked about pending legislation. There is no pending legislation in North Carolina to regulate limited services.
There's
pending legislation in several states, Oklahoma, Illinois, Missouri, and Alabama, but not currently in North Carolina.
Okay. If you want to join the conversation, 1-877-962-9862 is our number. And we go to Julianne, who is in Raleigh. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome to the program. Did you have a question or comment?
Actually, just a point of view. We are actually preparing to move. We've just sold our house for sale by owner, and we bought our next house with our agent. So we've actually sold and bought for sale by owner and sold and bought with our agent.
Mm-hmm. Do you think in one circumstance it helps to have an agent, and another you don't need that agent as much?
Well, for selling, obviously there's a financial incentive to not use an agent. The person that bought our house is also without an agent, so we saved commission on both ends with that transaction. Buying our house that we're going to be moving to, we had to have our agent for because it was a realtor-listed house, and you can't just, go knock on the door and get to see it. Mm-hmm. So we had to call our agent to see the house that we are preparing to buy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Glenn, did you want to jump in there?
One interesting point that hasn't been touched on yet is in this kind of industry standard 6% commission, the firm that has the listing, if another agent's not involved in the deal, they keep the full 6%. I mean, they kind of stick it to the consumer that way. Our model, if an unrepresented buyer buys the house, no commission is due. Mm-hmm. Again, I fall back to the point that it's difficult, like Mr. Picus is saying, how can less choice be better?
Okay. Chris is with us from Apex. Hi there, Chris. Hello, Chris. Chris was with us. Hello, Chris. Apparently we've lost Chris. And we go now to Richard in Raleigh. Hi, Richard.
Oh, good afternoon. I just got a question about the housing bubble in Raleigh that I've heard so much about. I'd like your opinion on that. Houses... my neighborhood are selling anywhere from $250 to $800 a square foot. And they're sometimes tearing down some rather nice smaller homes and putting up rather large ones. Mm-hmm. What's your view?
And when you speak of the housing bubble, are you talking about it like a situation similar to several years ago with the dot-com bubble?
Well, I had a colleague out in California that... his house went up to, I think, $1.2 million, and then he got a divorce and had to cash his wife out for half of that, and then the people thought, gosh, what are we doing, and the housing market plummeted, and he wound up in a terrible spot.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that. Is there a housing bubble right now? Because a lot of people are thinking real estate is the place to put money, and have been for the past few years.
Absolutely, and I would contend that it still is, particularly in North Carolina. The North Carolina market is dynamic, like we said at the outset, but it is not overheated like a lot of markets such as Washington, D.C., Anaheim, Las Vegas, Nevada. What we've had here in markets like Raleigh and Greensboro and Charlotte, we've had good, steady price appreciation. So houses are not just exorbitantly overvalued here. In fact, there's a lot of room for price appreciation. It's a good housing market. And I think the bigger problem, and Glenn and I were talking about this during a break, is that because of refinancing, a lot of people have pulled money out of their houses, and they find themselves in a dangerous situation that they don't have any real equity in their house, that they've instead used that for home financing purchases. And, you know, that's probably more problematic than any kind of an exorbitant price raise in the North Carolina market, because we really don't see that here. Mm-hmm.
Let me preface this by saying I'm not an economist. I am a CPA, though, and I will tell you my personal opinion based on what I see in the triangle is that there is some irrational exuberance related to real estate. I don't want to say I'm a naysayer and doom and gloom, but I think there in certain parts of the triangle there definitely is a bubble. I mean, enough so that I recently sold my house because I do not think that a year from now or 18 months from now when I had planned to move that I would be able to get the same price.
I think I heard a radio interview with an Economist magazine writer who talked about in some ways it's almost worth renting because you just don't know which way the market may go.
If I were looking to make an investment in housing, I'd be looking at the North Carolina coast as an investment. Mm-hmm. Because that's where you're getting the greatest price appreciation, that and in the mountains. You're not getting that kind of price raise in the urban market.
Well, now you're talking about my own backyard because I live on the North Carolina coast and there is a lot of discussion in my town about whether there is some of this irrational exuberance, whether there is a bubble. Noah Pickus, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, there's a lot of disagreement about whether there is a bubble or not. There's certainly regional booms have come and gone, and Tim's right, I think, certainly to point out differences even within the North Carolina market. But Robert Shiller, who wrote about irrational exuberance in the high-tech market, I think points out as well that what we seem to be seeing now is this national dimension in which, really since the late 90s, prices have been taking off. You get these stories of desperate bidding, people writing letters about how they'll take care of your house if you will, you know, and treat it right and pray in the right direction if they will only sell to you. And that's outstripping people's incomes. And the question that he raises is whether our attitude toward home buying has really changed. That 30, 40 years ago, we thought of home buying as part of normal living. You buy a home, and it's an investment, but you're not looking to get rich off of it. And now it's much more of a speculative kind of market where people think of buying homes as possibly changing their lives in this way, and that's driving us in very dangerous directions, and that even some of these new mortgage approaches, like the 3- and 5-year adjustable rate mortgages, are great opportunities in the short run, but what's going to happen is if people get locked into long-range mortgages at high prices, then we're going to see a significant collapse.
I often get a little queasy feeling about finances when I hear talk of things that at one point were a long-term investment. Owning a house for a number of years, it's where you live and you take care of it and you'll make some money on it versus the short-term gain, which is the speculation.
This is a factoid, but I can't remember where I read it. I think it might have been the Wall Street Journal. One out of every four homes purchased recently, 25% of transactions in a certain time period, I want to say maybe it was the last quarter, were bought by people looking to flip the house or rent it, bought on speculation. Mm-hmm. And at that level, like Mr. Pickus was saying, you move away from this is the house I'm going to live in to, boy, I'm going to make some money on this. That is an indication of a bubble.
Right.
Yeah, there is some irrational exuberance out there, but here are the facts. In the Triangle, in Charlotte, and in Triad, the average appreciation over the last 12 months is 5-7%. That's good, steady growth, and that's reality. Now, you go out to the coast, the Outer Banks, the average appreciation is 26%, and in Asheville, that's 27%. That's just happened in 12
months. A year.
Months. So 12 months. Las Vegas, Nevada, they had 52% price growth in 12 months.
That's a good bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you hear talk of that, I wonder if that's what contributes to something we've talked about often on this show, and that's just, you know, affordable housing and whether people can who live in a place like, say, the Outer Banks can, well, it's hard to even find a rent who are in the service industry.
We were just talking to your producer about the fact that living in Chapel Hill is prohibitively expensive, mm-hmm, for her in the position she's in.
Right.
I mean, it's happening here in the Triangle.
Okay. And we go to the phones now. Let's go to Margaret, who is in Durham. Hi there, Margaret.
Hi. I didn't think you'd come back to this topic, but I had an experience buying with a realtor, experience selling myself, and then buying with another realtor. And I just wanted to, and I did real well selling my own house, and I got lots of advice from realtors who were really nice about, you know, telling me to remember this and remember that and telling me what they thought my house was valued. And I would go back and use them again, I think. But
did they tell you to bake cookies so the house smelled good?
They did. Actually, I learned that when I was buying.
Oh, really? If I did that, I'd be the smell of burned cookies, I'm afraid. But
yeah. No. I bought flowers so it would smell good. And, you know, I took half the things out of every closet and all those deals. But what I want to say is about the value to me of the realtors who helped me buy a house. And that was, they were really candid about what they could and couldn't do, and they actually weren't able, offered to knock things off of their, the price that they would get if they did or didn't do certain things. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that they could do is they showed us only what we really wanted. So we said, you know, we want a house in this kind of location with this many rooms, with this kind of place where people could come visit us. And she showed us two or three that at first that weren't quite what we meant. And then she says, okay, I think I've got it. And she didn't call for a long time. And finally she called and she said, this house just went on the market. Nobody knows about it yet. The seller is willing to let us see it before it goes on. And it's your house. And
so you would make the case then, I guess, Margaret, for using a realtor to buy a house, but perhaps selling on your own. And I wonder if that might be the model. Or could you see a day when we would move toward that more? Tim, I guess you wouldn't want to see that because you're with the Association of Realtors, but the Internet's here to stay, yeah. And I wonder maybe 10 years from now, will we see it where more people would say, you know, I could sell this easily, but I do need some help when I buy.
Well, FSBOs aren't for everyone, and it depends on where you live, how hot your local housing market is, and whether or not you're willing to do all the transaction that's associated with making this real estate deal. And a lot of people don't have the wherewithal to do that. And then the other thing is time. You know, I mentioned earlier that 15% or more of houses spend 91 to 120 days on the market. And that's just a matter of time and how anxious a person is willing to how patient they're willing to be in selling their house.
But you put the figure at currently 14% of the homes are for sale by owner FSBOs. And do you have any predictions?
I do not have an industry statistic, but I can tell you that the number of people who are essentially doing a FSBO by choosing limited service or entry only into the MLS, it's growing every year, and it's growing to the extent that obviously it's drawn the ire of the National Association of Realtors.
Mm-hmm. Noah Pickus?
I don't have a comment on that, Melinda, but there's something I've been puzzling over as we've been talking when you think about the sort of ethics and the markets and how they come together here. Because in a large way, real estate is different from every other industry. It's much more self-regulated in the sense that there's no National Securities and Exchange Commission. And I'm on the plus side, I'm not aware that there are major scandals. You don't see perp walks of realtors the way, you know, you get Elliot Spitzer and Wall Street or insurance. And maybe there's something going on there about self-regulation and the sort of culture and internal rules that promote some of the very ethical behavior and trust that callers here are talking about. On the other hand, I'd point out it's precisely that self-regulation which makes realtors such a powerful bulwark against opening the market up to other people and using technology to actually drive down the cost for consumers. So I don't know if there's this relationship there, but I'm just speculating that we may be paying for this industry to operate in what seems to be a very good way.
Mm. Yeah. And you don't know, do you see changes coming to it because of the technology?
I think that I understand what Tim says about the intellectual property being produced by the realtor, but I find it hard to see how this model can sustain itself with the Justice Department and the GAO and the local some state investigations. That there's either the industry's going to have to open itself up to these online brokers and find a way around that, or I think they're going to get regulated heavily.
Okay. Well, that's where we have to stop for today, but I'd like to thank you all for being with us. Noah Pickus is Associate Director of the Keenan Institute for Ethics at Duke University and spoke to us by phone from there. Thanks so much, Noah.
And
thanks to Glenn Wallace, owner and founder of My Dog Tess, a discount real estate firm, and Tim Kent, Executive Vice President of the North Carolina Association of Realtors. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. If you have a comment about our program, you may send us an email here at sot@wunc.org. That's the state of things for today. Support for the state of things comes from listeners who support North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Melinda Pencava.